Excited to be with you all this morning. And if you are feeling nervous about me preaching this morning, that's okay. I'm also feeling nervous about me preaching this morning. If it makes you feel any better, this isn't my first sermon, it's my fourth sermon. So I'm not totally inexperienced, just mostly inexperienced. But no matter what happens, just know that I'm not long-winded. So you have that to look forward to. I'm truly honored that Major would ask me to do this and trust me to do this. I really appreciate the support of the staff and my family and the congregation. And I'm going to try really hard to bring you something meaningful this morning. When I think back to milestones or significant moments over the course of my life, I don't remember once thinking, I am too young for this. Now at 41, there are plenty of things I think I'm too old to do. Places I'm too old to go, things I'm too old to wear. But as a child, a teenager, a young woman, I never felt too young. Getting my ears pierced, babysitting, getting my driver's license, leaving for college, my first year of teaching, getting married, it never crossed my mind that I might be too young to do any of those things. Was I too young? Almost definitely. I started babysitting around the age of 11 or 12, and I babysat some pretty young children. As an adult, I can appreciate the trust those parents had in me, but there's almost no chance I would hire someone that young to care for an infant or preschooler. I was 15 years old when I was allowed to drive in a car by myself, only during the day, but still. At 15, I really had no business driving around alone, and my family would agree with that statement because they would be quick to tell you that I failed my driver's test more than once. I was 22 when I started teaching third grade, and I often joke that those kids probably didn't learn a thing because I had no idea what I was doing. I sure thought I did. After multiple practicums and a year of student teaching, I really thought I was ready. But if I could do it again, I know I would do it differently, and I know I could do it better. Of course, when we talk about this idea of being too young to do something, we're not just talking about age or a number. We're talking about maturity and ability and experience. Looking back, I know I didn't have the maturity, ability, or experience to do some of the things I did, but that was never a passing thought because I wanted to do those things. I felt ready to do those things. And while onlookers, mostly adult parental onlookers, may have had reservations and watched me do those things through gritted teeth, I didn't notice. I was excited and ready and dove in head first. Now, Jeremiah, well, in today's scripture reading, we see that he didn't quite feel that way about a significant moment in his life. God tells Jeremiah that he is being appointed to be a prophet to the nations. And Jeremiah's response, "You got the wrong guy. I'm too young for this. I don't know how to do it." And Jeremiah was young. He was probably in his late teens. He was living in the town of Anathoth, a few miles from Jerusalem. His father was a priest, and he probably had a lot of knowledge about the law and the temple and traditions. He may even have been studying for the priesthood himself, but we have no reason to believe that Jeremiah was any sort of well-known political or religious figure with whom God would find favor. He was just a young man living his life. So he probably was caught off guard when God told him he had an important job to do, a job planned for Jeremiah long before he was formed in the womb. Jeremiah's calling to be a prophet wasn't an off-the-cuff thing. It wasn't a response to the unrest that was going on in Judah at the time. It was Jeremiah's calling to a lifetime of service. It was God's ultimate plan for his life. But as a teenager, that's a lot to process and consider and think about. It's not surprising that Jeremiah felt uncertain about this call. So what's the difference between my personal experience and Jeremiah's calling? Why did I always say, "Yes, I'm ready," with every new thing? And why did Jeremiah say, "I'm not ready for that"? For one, I'm really not talking about calling from God. I have stories of calling in my life that are special to me, but outside of making the decision to be baptized around 12 or 13, those stories really occurred later in life. I'm talking about those rites of passage a lot of young people experience. The second difference between my life and Jeremiah's is that I wanted those things. I anticipated those things. I waited for years to be able to go and do and have those experiences. And even being baptized, which I truly felt called to do, was an event I knew would come and was excited for. Jeremiah had no idea this call was coming. He didn't have time to plan or prepare or get excited. It was out of the blue. So it makes sense that he would be reluctant to accept that call. And I know for a fact that there are people in this room and in this congregation who had experiences as young people that were scary and difficult and full of uncertainty. And unlike the personal experiences I'm talking about, you probably did feel too young for those encounters. You faced something unexpected and didn't feel prepared to handle what was coming your way. You can understand Jeremiah's response to God in this surprising moment. But Jeremiah's reluctance isn't the end of the story. God is quick to respond, and not in a "because I said so" kind of way, but in an encouraging way. God tells Jeremiah, "Don't sell yourself short. Don't say, 'I am only a boy.'" After all, God had already used other young men and women to do important work. A young sister, Miriam, saved her baby brother Moses by boldly approaching Pharaoh's daughter and arranging for Moses to be nursed by their mother. Her courage saved the future deliverer of Israel. Samuel was just a boy when he heard God call his name, and he went on to be a prophet and spiritual leader who guided Israel in its transition to kingship. And in his later years, he anointed another young man, David, to be the future king of Israel. And David, who was far from perfect, was a man who sought God and trusted God's guidance and was ultimately promised a descendant who would rule forever. And God's use of young people didn't end with Jeremiah. Many young men and women were called after him to do the work of the Lord, and folks continue to be called now. So God knew that Jeremiah's age did not equate to inadequacy. God told Jeremiah he would be given the exact words to speak to the exact people that needed to hear them. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you. I am here, and you are protected. And God goes on to tell Jeremiah that the words he speaks will destroy and overthrow, but that they will also build and plant. And that nicely sums up what Jeremiah would go on to do when he accepted God's call. He accused the people of Judah of breaking their covenant with God, of worshiping other gods, of building idol shrines, of corrupt leadership and social injustice. He warns them until the last minute that the Babylonians are coming and that they will be taken into captivity. And he continues to prophesy as Jerusalem is destroyed and the people are exiled. But through all of this, through the destruction and the overthrowing, he promises restoration and brings messages of hope. He builds and plants by telling the Israelites that their story isn't over. In fact, one of the most commonly quoted verses from Jeremiah, Jeremiah 29:11, "For surely I know the plans I have for you, plans for your welfare and not for harm," is a message to the exiles, telling them to hold tight, that they will be allowed to return to Jerusalem. So God walks with Jeremiah from the beginning, showing him where to go and what to do. And that's Jeremiah's story. And it's an amazing story of calling. So what do we do with it? At first glance, we may struggle to see similarities between ourselves and Jeremiah. His story is unique. It's historically significant. It's very specific to a time and place and culture. But the truth is that God is calling us. And we may not think we're too young, but we are certainly quick to come up with other excuses. God, I really don't have time for that. My schedule isn't going to allow for that. God, that's really hard work. Too many other things in my life are hard right now. God, I can't go sit down and interact with those people. We don't speak the same language, or they didn't vote for the same person I did, or they don't have the same background as me. God, I'm not going to be accepted to do what you're asking me to do. People aren't going to like that I'm a man or a woman, or they're not going to like how I dress, or they're not going to agree with how I live, or people are going to think I'm crazy if I do that. It's so easy to come up with excuses. And that's a personal statement. It's easy for me to come up with excuses, even when I feel God's call. But I hope that in those moments, when we want to make an excuse rather than answer the call, we can think about God's overall message to Jeremiah. I have this plan for you. I know you can do it. I will show you what to do. I am with you to deliver you. God makes the same promise to us when we're asked to do something. God isn't going to say, do this, and then abandon us. God is going to walk beside us as we take it step by step. And as I worked on this message today, I couldn't help but think beyond personal calling to our church's calling. There have been a lot of conversations in recent months, both formally through the Dawnings process and informally with friends, about what God is calling First Baptist Church Jefferson City to do next. Should we open a preschool? Should we find new ways to partner with Amos? Should we partner with someone else? Should we expand the work of our benevolence committee? So many ideas, so many questions. So many faithful followers of Jesus excited to see what's next for this church that we love. And I think we're getting closer and closer to figuring out what that may be. And I trust that when that happens, we're not going to say, God, we're too fill in the blank to do that. I believe we're going to join together to answer that call with full hearts and ready hands. But that's a church calling, a group project. The risk of failure seems lower when we partner together. Personal calling is trickier. It often involves questioning whether or not we're even understanding God's message correctly, and even if we're sure about what we're being asked to do, we have to decide if we're going to follow through, and when we do, we worry we're not doing it right. It's a lot, and it's scary, and I'm sure Jeremiah felt that way too. But we know how that turned out, and we can trust God to do the same thing for us. In closing this morning, I want to acknowledge the fact that sometimes when we talk about calling, it feels like we're only talking about big, life-changing events. Where should I go to school? Should I take this new job? Should I consider this leadership role? Do I need to make a change for my family? Or it feels like we're only talking about spiritual matters. Should our church hire this person? Should I get involved with this ministry? Should I give my money to this mission project? What should our church do next? And I don't know about you, but messages like the one I'm giving you this morning can feel like something you put in your back pocket and hold on to and hope to remember the next time you have to make a major decision in your life. But Nanette sent me an article this past week that was sent to her by Ray Dalton. And she passed it on to me because she thought it might be applicable to what we're talking about today. And it really was perfect, so thank you, Nanette and Ray. The article makes a beautiful point about the idea of daily calling, what she calls universal Christian calling. The writer, Holly Berkeley Fletcher, who was a child of international missionaries and spent her formative years in Kenya, says that her life has been defined by divine calling, but not her own. She goes on to, in all honesty, question the validity of calling and how people truly know when they're being called by God. It's a very interesting article that raises a lot of good points, but it's what she says at the end that really felt pertinent to what we're talking about this morning. She says, as a person of faith myself, I've become less fixated on what God might have planned for me personally than on the universal Christian calling to love my neighbor as myself and the winding road toward understanding what that really means and allowing it to change me. Each new day offers opportunities to listen for this kind of calling, to use the gifts we've been given and serve the people we meet along the way, to lift others up and share God's love. This is indeed a sacred calling. She goes on to say, the discovery and expression of who God created us to be through relationship, vocation, service, or even the most boring responsibilities is the miraculous conduit through which we fulfill our divine purpose. So if you're thinking this morning, I don't have anything tremendous going on right now. I don't have a significant decision to make. I'm just going to class. I'm just taking care of my kids. I'm just going to work. I'm just enjoying my retirement. That's okay. That's more than okay. Because God knew us before we were formed in the womb. God knows where we've been and where we're going. And every day that we seek God and give it our all to love our neighbors as ourselves, we learn more about what it means to be a follower of Jesus and work towards fulfilling our divine purpose. We don't have to be a Jeremiah. We don't have to be a prophet. We don't even have to try to singularly change the world. We just have to live our lives. Because we have an opportunity every single day to answer God's call, the daily call of loving God, loving others, being open to God's plans for our lives, and trusting God to be with us through all of it. Amen.